This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 28th of April, 2022. Interesting markets yesterday because we were testing that key support in equity markets once again, even poking through in the case of the NASDAQ 100. I haven't quite gotten there yet in the S&P 500, the broader market. But managing to sort of scrape together a sideways close, if you will, avoiding the intraday new lows, closing at those. But then overnight, a big boost in sentiment. Maybe a bit ironically, Peter, it's been the weakest of the lot, this Meta, ahead of the earnings report last night. It wasn't a great earnings report, but it was feared to be horrible. So I guess that was the odd sort of good news that supported sentiment after hours. And then we have huge news out of the Bank of Japan overnight, but I'll get to that in a moment. First of all, Peter, your assessment of both the Meta news and how that sort of supported the broader market and then yesterday's session.
Yeah, the broader market is still weak. We have a ton of different risks. You'll mention one of them. There's a lot of things going on in the currencies, and we also see a wobbling going on in the high yield space, actually in selected places. And it was funny. I mean, Meta has been done terribly going into this earnings season. A lot of nervousness, and you could actually see from the gain. So I have it on slide three. So the shares gained 18% in extended trading, and that's despite, it's very unusual, but that's despite, you can see here, it's highlighted in green in that little insert, that they're guiding Q2 revenue of $28 to $30 billion versus almost 31 expected by sell side analysts on the consensus. So that just tells you that the market was fearing a lot worse. I still think there are some things that I want to highlight that is bad. So they're losing $3 billion alone in what they call Reality Labs. So that's their new Metaverse and Oculus bets. So that, I think, is worse enough. You could argue on the positive side that things could have been much worse given that they have lost the ability to track their users on iPhones. And you are seeing that the average price per ad served was actually down 8% versus minus 4% estimated, but they actually had a lot of ad impressions. So they increased the volume to offset the impact on the P on the price because of Apple's decision. So, but I think Meta will still be weak for some time, and we have some other earnings. We can talk about it. PayPal was also slightly better, but very bad results. And you saw, you know, bubble stocks and Cathie Wood and ARK Invest still much under pressure. I think this market is still heavy, John. We had an internal call, and I do agree with Steen Jacobson, our CIO, that if you look at some of the coincident indicators, you know, Chicago Fed and the Eurocoin, you know, growth is really solid in the US and Europe, despite, you know, consumer confidence being weak. So there are cases to be made
here. Look there. It depends where you look.
Yeah,
there.
I know. But so there is a case to be made for still buying equities here, but I still think you need to be a little bit defensive, and you cannot ignore commodities and defense and logistics, et cetera, as we've talked about. You still need to get that into the mix.
Yeah, and then I just zoomed out on the little chart insert there on slide two on the NASDAQ 100, just emphasizing once again the importance of this the support areas, the pivot lows of the year, those lows just below 13,000 that we briefly poked below yesterday. Also, the Fibonacci retracement, the 38.2, so a major one from the pandemic lows, that enormous move off of those. And you can see that the next big sticky area potentially on the way down, not so much in Fibonacci terms, but it was the pre-election high, that zone I've sort of outlined from 12,500 and just below that, ahead of the bigger ones, you know, way further south that we, of course, hope don't come into view. But that is the risk here if this market does remain heavy, as Peter is talking about. But we need to get to something that I think is also affecting the commodity space, and it's the big, strong dollar here. I think this is the most underappreciated, or at least to my mind, as the currency guy around here. This, you know, really brings a tremendous risk to global markets, this dollar liquidity situation and this dollar strength. It is getting to levels here over the last few sessions where it is becoming a phenomenon unto itself, and I think a risk sentiment driver as well. And the Bank of Japan certainly not helping things overnight in a doubling down once again on its yield curve control policy. I thought there might be some chance given that big fiscal package that was trotted out by the government to help with cost of living expenses. And we're coming into some July lower house elections. These are important, a political part of the political cycle in Japan. We might be seeing some political heat forcing the Bank of Japan, even if they don't do anything at this meeting, to have at least indicated they might be willing to tinker with the target if global yields were also rising or something, some sort of, you know, a bit of daylight coming into the closed mental spaces, apparently, and closed attitude there on the Bank of Japan on Kuroda's part. But it was not to be. Doubling down, daily auctions, unlimited. So basically, the Bank of Japan surrendering control of their balance sheet to the market. So they talk about their yield asset purchase targets remaining unchanged. But well, they are changed because the market is going to tell you what they are, not the Bank of Japan. In other words, they are forced to, by keeping that yield cap on the 10-year JGBs, they're forced to buy whatever they have to keep it. So and then they even lowered their, or they did raise their this financial year, which is through March of next year, CPI target to 1.9% from the prior 1.1%, pretty considerable adjustment, but then they lowered the one for the following year to 1.1%. So clearly a transitory inflation narrative from the Bank of Japan, and justifiably the yen, just the bottom dropped out once again, dollar yen exploding higher to new highs, well above 130 as we're speaking here. I snapped a chart not long ago and that was barely above 130. We've gone more closer to 131 than 130 at one point before we came here to record this. So this is not being picked up. If you go to slide 4, you can see the dollar yen chart there. And not getting picked up so much yet on our FX board. The trend readings, they take a day or two to because of smoothing to kick into gear, but obviously the yen to new lows here. And I think the only thing that will stop it would be global yields coming off and quite heavily so elsewhere. I think that would be the only thing that could stop this yen from continuing to fall. Pointing out the Norwegian krona as well, just quite weak there. I think some of that is technical as dollar Noki broke a key level around 920. And you see that dollar reading at 9.1. This is a white knuckle stuff in terms of trend strength. And it could get worse if US yields continue higher here. I mean, look at where we are. We haven't even got the Fed starting to reduce its balance sheet. But that leads me over to your space, Ole, because this strong dollar is being felt to a degree in the commodity market, but you're pointing out not so much in the food space, which is not really, that's not really where the focus is here.
No, I think the first slide today I have on slide 5 is basically just highlighting the commodities, the surge we're seeing in food commodities. It is being led by edible oils, oil sector, which is palm oil, soybean oil, sunflower oil, and so on. We saw soybean oil hit a record high during the past 24 hours. And it is just, again, we're coming back to the war and also some weather worries, basically just reducing supplies from Ukraine. In Denmark, we're now seeing rationing on if you want to buy sunflower oil. There's still plenty of stock available. But obviously, if we do see this war drag on, then a large part of Ukraine's sunflower production is at risk. And that could, as this highlight suggests, it could drop by close to 50%. But we also have at the same time palm oil surging through the roof with Indonesia implementing an export ban. Indonesia produce much more than they consume themselves, so that ban is likely to be temporary, but at least for now they are putting it in place in order to curb domestic prices. And it just highlights this the risk of food security that is leading to these interventions from governments around the world. But the edible oil one is one we will feel an impact for, and because obviously it is anything from cooking oil to fuel and to cosmetics. So that's just another nail in the inflation coffin.
All right, we have also gold on the retreat here. This dollar strength even extending to against the precious metals. We have broken down against some key supports. I guess there's a couple of them left, though, before we can say that this is just a full reversal of this gold market, at least, and especially important, at least in dollar terms.
Exactly, John, and I think that's it's just important to stress, because I've held a few webinars over the last couple of days, and the question is obviously constantly why is gold such a horrible investment? And I think you just need to look at horrible from the sense that it should have been a lot higher because we got the inflation at the 40-year high. But just take a look at the table I put in here. Yes, the gold in price in dollars is only up around 3%. We're actually bouncing while we record this. But look at the gold price in Europe, for instance. We're up 11% on the year. If you if you had had a switch out of European stocks into gold at the beginning of the year, you would have been up nearly 25%. You would have been up close to 20% if you had been switching out of government bonds. So that is, I think that is a deal that anyone would take at this time, at moment in time. If you look at the US as well, where S&P and US bonds are trading again, having made 3% in a year where some of you experienced massive losses elsewhere, that's still a good deal. So, but for now, the dollar is king, and it's sapping demand. I think the market was also worried ahead of next week's FOMC, see what comes out of it. So we'll keep an eye on that 77 level, which we briefly broke below, but below that 1850 level, and then the 200-day moving average. Those are the key levels, and in order for the market to start showing any kind of strength again, we at a minimum need to break back above 1890.
Yeah, and you recorded you hosted a webinar yesterday. We've got the link to that on slide 7, a full update with Ole Hansen across markets. Do look it down at the bottom of the page. You can find under the previous webinar section the link to that. And I just wanted to briefly question you, well, I'm sure you're more up to date than I am on this whole situation with the paying for rubles business for Russian natural gas. I've seen conflicting headlines. The politicians are saying to the importers, don't do this, but some of them are apparently willing to pay in rubles. What's the latest there?
Well, the latest is most certainly that some do accept payment in ruble, and I think the focus there is really on Germany. Germany is obviously the one still most dependent on, or where the lights really would be turned off if gas supplies were cut to Germany. So we're in a situation that even though we've got a war raging, Russia needs the money, Europe needs the gas, and that just makes me believe that we will find some kind of a compromise. Poland was a low hanging fruit. Russia obviously wants a signal that they're not pleased with Poland's efforts to support Ukraine, but also Poland has already signaled that they will cut off supplies from Russia by the end of this year because they have other alternatives coming in. So it was just a trial balloon, just to send a strong signal, and I think that signal has been read, and we will find compromises. So gas in Europe back to 100 euros, but more importantly, I think gas for next winter, the 22-23 winter from October to March, is trading at 100 euros as well, basically indicating the market is not looking for, they're still looking for a very, very troubled few months ahead, with the storage levels potentially not building at the pace that everyone would like to see.
For people not familiar with long-term with commodity forward curves, that is the most remarkable part of all of this, that normally when you have these supply crunches, you get this wildly backwardated curve, for example, where the forward price is dramatically higher than longer-term prices, but that's simply not the case. So it's a very interesting market here. All right, Peter, we need to get back to earnings because we have the world's largest company, at least I think it is, right? Apple reporting after the close today. What are you looking for there? And, what do you think is going to drive sentiment as these biggest companies are continuing to report?
Yeah, it's not only Apple. We also have Amazon. And Apple and Amazon, maybe my headline today on slide 8, on slide 8, by the way, maybe a little bit conflicting because I say Apple and Amazon earnings are 10% of S&P 500. Their market cap is 10% of S&P 500. So their contribution to the overall earnings per share for the S&P 500 is, of course, 10% from a weighting perspective. So it's those two stocks, of course, are very, very important for sentiment and where we go short term and whether this rebound in equities that we have talked about has a little bit of a leg here. Apple, of course, being in more in the physical world, they're generating a lot of their profits from in the digital world, selling things on through their app system, etc. They have streaming services, but they also make quite a substantial amount of money on hardware. And they have talked recently about supply constraints, and with everything that's taking place in China, there could be a small negative surprise tonight in those earnings and in their guidance going forward. And also, could Apple actually be subject to substitution effects? That is also something we need to contemplate here, because we're seeing the substitution effects in the grocery market. We're seeing it across a lot of different consumer brands. Could it also happen to Apple? You can get very much cheaper phones from Samsung, etc. So, and you have a point.
My belief would be no, but within Apple brands, there's certainly a variety of, you could hold on your phone longer and you could go down to an SE or a smaller phone.
That's a very good point. That's a very good one. I think
it's a status thing and you're married to your platform the thing as well. But
yeah, I agree with that sentiment. And then Amazon, basically two different worlds, because you have the Amazon Web Services that will be absolute firing on all cylinders. I'm absolutely sure that that part of the business will do extremely well. That's what we have seen from Microsoft and Alphabet. But then you have their e-commerce business. They're really under pressure, galloping wages in their logistics and warehouse centers, their fulfillment centers. They have galloping costs and bottlenecks in their supply chain. A lot of different issues for Amazon, that part of the business. Very curious to see how that stacks up. And then, of course, Caterpillar. So Apple and Amazon reports after the US market closed. Caterpillar typically reports in the pre-market. So that's really the big one to follow today, also because they have a very big footprint in the global construction industry, and they are very big in China. And they are very unusual. They're very transparent compared to other companies, because a big part of their business is coming from China. So they have to do it according to the accounting rules. So you can get a very good idea of what's happening in China from reading into the Caterpillar results. And then just very quickly, if I can comment as well, Total, one of the major oil and gas majors here in Europe, they're not lifting their investments. They're just talking about buying back their own shares. And to me, it will just extend and prolong this energy crisis. We really need to get these oil companies back into the fold and be a team player here. They're doing what they're doing from an absolutely perfect, logical and rational angle, because there is so much uncertainty of whether they can have these investments for 15 years because of our drive to do the green transformation. But we really need them to dig into the ground and get more oil. And then I've highlighted in that small insert on slide 8 again. Look how the quarterly revenue per share figures have actually stalled, and they're actually declining a little bit for the Nasdaq 100 here in the Q1. There's a little bit of seasonality effect, of course, in the Nasdaq, because Amazon gets a lot of their revenue in Q4. Also Apple.
Yeah, just finally, small final point on Amazon with that unionization drive at the Staten Island facility. It's a very interesting angle on labor costs potentially going forward if that move spreads. I listen to some one podcast occasionally that sort of taps into the younger generation, and there is a lot of pro unionization sentiment across the U.S. sort of anti large company sentiment. It's very interesting development to watch as we go forward with stories like that. All right, briefly today we have essentially right as I'm speaking here, we've had a Riksbank decision that is coming out. I assume they've hiked. Maybe if Ola's still on the line, he can actually check that for me while I run through the rest of the calendar. Today, the majority assuming they were going to hike at 25 basis points. And interesting to see the guidance because they do a rate forecast. And previously in the February statement, they were still talking about liftoff in 24. And here they are lifting off in April. So a huge shift there, obviously.
Yeah, John, actually, the Riksbank has raised the interest rates by 0.25%.
All right, so a positive interest rate there for the first time in a while, and we'll see how that's affecting the Swedish krona. I prefer it versus the euro, but it tends to be very vulnerable to risk deleveraging, so I have to be careful on that front. Then we have the flash CPI out of Germany. That one is expected to have dipped ever so slightly to 7.2% from the 7.3% in March, and then we have the U.S. GDP figures. A annualized rate of only 1% growth. There was a massive inventory surge that drove the crazy 6.9% GDP number in Q4. So there's some hangover effects from that, et cetera. But watching this 1% growth rate, surprise side, I'm not sure it really moves the market that much, but as well, the price index, GDP price index expected at 7.2%. So interesting developments to watch there. And then rounding out the week, we have the CPI out of the Eurozone tomorrow, but as well the PCE inflation data out of the U.S. and that preliminary University of Michigan sentiment number. I'm also curious to see that. But the PCE inflation is really the last big data point ahead of that Wednesday FOMC meeting next week. And again, this dollar charging higher is really a big risk here. I think it's very reflexive with overall global risk sentiment as well. And they sort of drive each other when things are going the wrong way. So just be aware of, if you're not used to tracking currencies, keep a few dollar pairs on your screen, dollar CNH, not least of those, the dollar CNH level, by the way, responding to that move overnight by a dollar yen, not as quite to the degree, but we are now halfway between the lows and a seven level on dollar CNH. So a big move, and it just gives you perspective on how quickly suddenly we could be talking about the highest cycle in dollar CNH if this continues for much longer. So I'll be careful out there. Let's see where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.